Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And the thing that I'm going to talk to you about in this episode is the impact of bombing over Germany during the Second World War. Mainly, we're talking about bombing here from Great Britain and the United States. The Soviet Union didn't really have the capacity for anything other than tactical battlefield aircraft bombing. Large four-engined aircraft was not something that Stalin had foreseen as being a way of projecting Soviet power during the war, and indeed the way in which Soviet power is projected is through infantry and armoured divisions. The First World War had seen the beginnings of air power. Air power was in its infancy during the First World War, and it only really becomes a significant means of waging war in 1917 to 1918. The idea of mass aerial bombing was developed during the First World War, and London was actually attacked by the German Air Force in 1918 with large four-engine Gotha bombers and Zeppelins. In the interwar years, all the major powers of Europe realised that there was potential for air power to give them military strength, and the view that air power was the new significant game changer was confirmed in 1935 with the bombing of Abyssinia. In 1936, with the use of Hitler's Condor Legion air force in Spain, not just Guernica, but other incidents of air power used against the forces of the Republic. And in 1937, the bombing of China by the Japanese. In each of these instances, British politicians particularly looked on with abject horror, seeing the harm, the destruction that would be done to London, which indeed actually they grossly overestimate. And there was one estimate that in the first 100 days of bombing there'd be something like 15 million deaths and society would collapse. The British were keen to prevent during the war too many of their citizens from going underground, from using the London Underground system as a air raid shelter, for fear that they wouldn't re-emerge and that the British economy would collapse as a result. People would just live subterraneally. The German Air Force engaged in terror bombing in nearly every major campaign that Hitler fought, in cities as diverse as Warsaw in Poland and Rotterdam in Holland and Coventry in Britain were bombed. But by the end of the Second World War, Allied bombing over Germany had reduced large parts of nearly every major city to ruins. The scale and the intensity and the duration of bombing over Germany by America and Britain was vastly greater than German attacks on Britain though it is questionable what value this all had in the end. The debates have gone on since the end of the war as to the efficacy of bombing and the morality of bombing. As Richard Overy in his book The Bombing War pointed out, they've generated more heat than light. The first bombing raid over Germany was on the 19th of March 1940. This is really just at the end of what we would call the phony war period, or the Sitzkrieg, as the German army called it. And the British had always imagined that mass aerial bombing would be a weapon that they would employ. The Luftwaffe wasn't really geared up to attacks on cities, whereas the RAF was. The Luftwaffe don't have any large four-engine bombers. The RAF start out with Whitley bombers and Wellington bombers, which were two-engined, and then they expand to four-engined Halifax and then Lancasters. Which bring a huge, and Sunderland's, which bring a huge payload, I think about 4 tons per aircraft, to Germany. This was all part of the British view of how war should, with Germany, should pan out. It was meant to be a war of attrition to wear down the enemy infrastructure, and it was designed to prevent a mass campaign on land, the likes of which World War One had been. Aerial bombing was designed to prevent the deadlock of the trenches. Franklin Roosevelt saw war in quite a similar way. He intended for America to be the aircraft workshop of the world, and that before America committed to fighting in the war, Roosevelt hoped that if he could create an air armada of about 20,000 aircraft, then that could either be used by the United States or loaned to a friendly power to be used. And it would be such an overwhelming force that particularly Hitler would not dare to put a foot out of line. Obviously, Hitler's mentality was an unknown here, and Roosevelt didn't realise that there was very little that was going to dissuade him from war in Europe, let alone the possibility of mass aerial bombing, which Hitler wasn't particularly considering. But German air defence planners had thought about in detail, even if much of this was lost in Goering, who underfunded and was largely ignorant of air defence strategies and allowed German targets to be left vulnerable, and was unable to provide the kind of air defences that he'd convinced Hitler would be operational by the start of the war. The first bombing raids in 1940, and those that continued after the retreat at Dunkirk, showed German people that the belief that the British would realise that their situation was hopeless and would come to a negotiated settlement with Hitler were unfounded, and that the fighting would go on. The German public didn't really feel the effects of bombing in 1940. The bombing raids were poorly coordinated and rather piecemeal and unstrategic, and they were what little the British were able to do to carry the fight to the enemy. But there's an element to suggest that they were quite unsettling as well. The belief that the British should have given up by late 1940 brought to light a sense of nagging doubt. The regime had assured the German people that cities were absolutely safe and well defended with aircraft, anti-aircraft guns, and there was no possibility of the British being able to carry out bombing raids. So many Berliners, particularly don't bother with air raid shelters to begin with. They think that the noise are air raid sirens or false alarms. Not much physical damage is done, and many Germans, they see that the attacks just mean that Germany hasn't won outright, but that Britain's position is fairly helpless. The first civilian deaths occur on the 28th of August 1940, where 12 people are killed and 1,000 people are made homeless. And the regime presents the RAF particularly as a terrorist organisation. They refer it to it as. Raids happen over Berlin in the same period and in other major cities, and they become a kind of a regular occurrence. The British, in the guise of Arthur Bomber Harris, believed that a bombing strategy could wear down the enemy. And Harris wanted to show the other service chiefs that bombing could win the war alone. Right up until 1944, he's really, really certain of this. He thought that the German economy first could be destroyed. German economy and infrastructure could be devastated by bombing. And when it turns out that the German economy isn't destroyed by aerial bombing, Harris argues that the real target, therefore, is civilian morale, to bomb the German worker out of his home. And this would cause the war effort to eventually collapse. And again, that appears to be increasingly less likely as the war draws on. Much as with Britain, bombing brought about a sense of defiance, determination, a refusal to submit to the enemy. So Berlin is quite a hard target. It's difficult to reach and it's far to the east. But it was west of the Rhine, really, that the big attacks happen. So in particularly in Hamburg, which is a kind of a choice target for the British, is easy to reach on along the coast. In 1940, there were 70 raids on the city. And by 1940...
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Two, there had been another 137. By mid-1942, just over 1,400 people had been killed and 24,000 had been made homeless. This was in a city with a population of 2 million. This time, the British began... by this time, the British had begun to build large four-engine bombers such as the Lancaster. And these carried, as discussed earlier, a much bigger payload. So in 1942, the first 1,000 bomber raid took place, destroying most of the city and killing nearly 500 people. During that raid, 135,000 residents of the city fled and 12,500 buildings were either destroyed or damaged. So the impact of the raids were in terms of individuals. A large number were made homeless or injured. A smaller number, you know, they're not insignificant if you're one of them, were killed. But the raid had a huge psychological effect on the German population, and it showed to the German people that mass sort of annihilation raids were possible, and they could be made regular if need be. The British actually couldn't constantly deploy 1,000 aircrafts at a time. They had to take as many bombers as they possibly could do from as many services as possible. And the British devised some fairly unpleasant tactics, such as leaving timed explosives, bombs with timers, that would detonate and kill the first responders, so kill the ambulances and fire crews when they came to put out the fires. This would leave cities such as Hamburg and later Cologne burning. When the Americans joined the war, the combined bomber offensive sees the RAF and the United States Army Air Force, the 8th Army Air Force, combine in order to attack Germany around the clock. So in January 1943, the British and Americans met at Casablanca to decide the future course of the war. Their ally, the Soviet Union, demanded a second front in Europe, and Stalin wanted an Allied cross-channel invasion of France in 1943. This cross-channel invasion, this second front, had been promised on a number of occasions previous to this, and Stalin was growing impatient. His suspicion, of course, was that the British weren't, and Americans were happy for Hitler and the Soviet Union to destroy each other on the Eastern Front and thus eliminate two problematic regimes. And he may well have been at least partly right in thinking this. But the reality really is that it was inconceivable that the British would be able and the Americans would be able to mount a cross-channel invasion in 1943. They certainly weren't prepared for it. Much of this falls on deaf ears. When the Soviets are given these kinds of responses, the size of D-Day is pretty much minuscule compared to some of the Soviet deployments on the Eastern Front when it actually happens. But the British and the Americans don't feel prepared enough to launch an invasion of France. But what they can do is attack and create a second front in the air. Churchill was always reluctant about a cross-channel invasion and thought that it was the best thing to do was to wear down the enemy at the periphery of their empire and attack in places like Italy, and he also hoped to establish another front in Greece, the first of which happens, the second which kind of doesn't. When the British invade Greece at the end of the war. So the British and Americans planned a dramatic escalation of the air war over Germany. Not that this, I think, impresses Stalin that much. And this is the combined bombing offensive. It meant that Germany's military and economic infrastructure would be attacked around the clock. The US Air Army Air Force, the 8th Air Force, flew daylight raids in B-17 bombers, and these would fly in Flying Fortress Diamond formations. And the British flew in a straight line of Lancasters by night. The round-the-clock bombing had significant effects on Germany. the raw value where most of Germany's industry was targeted. The hydroelectric dams on the Eder and Moon rivers were destroyed during the dam buster raids with the specially designed bouncing bomb, which in terms of material economic damage and the diversion of troops was quite an enormous effect. There are quite a few revisionist historians that sort of sniff at the dam busters raid and say, well, you know, it was for show really, but they actually really do a considerable amount of damage. On the 24th of July 1943, 791 RAF bombers caused a firestorm through the city of Hamburg, which was predominantly wood. Two further bombing attacks on the 29th of July and the 2nd of August followed, and the US Air Force bombed by day. These attacks killed 40,000 civilians, destroyed 256,000 homes and made nearly 1 million people homeless. The anger of the population seemed to be directed at the regime, however, for their inability to stop the raids. And many believe that the Hamburg raid was evidence that the war was lost. And this comes sort of fairly hot on the heels that spring of the revelation that Stalingrad had fallen and the Eighth Army had been lost. I'm talking about the Sixth Army, I do apologise. So as the intensity of the bombing increases, nightly visits to the air raid shelter became reality for lots of Germans. Conditions inside basement shelters were often cramped and insanitary, and the shelters were far from being bomb-proof. In Berlin, air raid shelters were periodically hit by British bombs, collapsing and killing the people within. And in 1940, Hitler planned a huge network of bunkers to be built in what was called the Sofort Programme, or the Emergency Programme. Keeping the population from in most major cities safe. The bunker system planned by Hitler was going to be built across 6,000 sites for large-scale bunkers and was meant to house 35 million Germans. In Berlin, three flak towers were built, which were these huge kind of concrete pyramids armed with anti-aircraft guns with room for 8,000 civilians underneath. Each neighbourhood had an air raid warden who was given the task of making sure that bunkers were maintained and local residents obeyed raid instructions. One of them was obviously a racial instruction to keep the Jews out. Each neighbourhood had a large number, many neighbours had large numbers of foreign workers from across Europe and who found it hard to gain access to the shelters. And the Jews who hadn't yet been transported to death camps were completely unable to access shelters for Aryan Germans and had to use bunkers solely designed for Jews, ones which didn't really stand much of a chance of surviving a direct hit. Even when the expansion of the bunker system happened, the shelters were packed and overcrowded. On some occasions later in the war, Germans died in stampedes to get inside the raids, inside the shelters as the raids grew in intensity. And by early 1944, Berlin was given a respite from the heavy bombing, as Allied aircraft instead bombed roads and railways in France to prepare for D-Day. I suppose that the final act of the bombing war, one which probably we'll go into in more depth in a later podcast, because it's surrounded with such controversy, was the bombing of Dresden. Dresden was a medieval German town, and 11 weeks before the end of the Second World War in Europe, as the Red Army advanced across the east, the RAF and the US Air Force bombed the city. On the 13th and 14th of February 1945, long after the outcome of the conflict was certain to all parties, the city was flooded with refugees when bombers started a firestorm. A study carried out in 2010 concluded that 20 to 25,000 people died. The bombing was seen as unnecessary, and even in Britain, where the popular mood was deeply anti-German, it was the last mass bombing by the Allies, and even Churchill questioned whether it had been a necessity. The stats surrounding the bombing of Dresden have varied wildly, with some quite outlandish claims in the hundreds of thousands. And in a way, that's to kind of trivialise the history itself, that the death of 20,000 people is a sufficiently significant figure without kind of, you know, embellishment or inaccurate research. But I think we'll revisit that debate another time. Anyway, I hope you've found this little talk through on the bombing war interesting, and we're going to go into some greater depth looking at everyday life in Germany in the next few weeks during the Second World War. So make sure you tune in, and also give us a good write-up if you can, and a review on the Explaining History iTunes page, and we'll catch you on the next podcast. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.